Graceland. And obviously, we're talking about grace. We talked about grace last week with who Jesus is. And Jesus is the grace man who embodies grace. He is full of truth and grace. That's what John, the first chapter of John, the Gospel of John, tells us, that Jesus came full of truth and grace. And so that we can receive grace upon grace, as you read that out. So we talked about that last week. This week we want to look at grace in the Old Testament. Was there grace in the Old Testament, right? You don't necessarily see that word grace come up in the Old Testament, but is there grace in the Old Testament? There absolutely is grace in the Old Testament. It's all throughout Scripture, and so that's where we're going to go this morning. Before we get there, we think about Graceland, and Graceland is a place. Makes me think of places that we travel to. Anybody ever traveled to Disney World or Disneyland? You know, you ever took a trip, right, to one of those places? And you know that can be an expensive trip to load everybody up, and it can be a laborious trip, especially if you're making it with little kids, right? It could be a laborious trip making it with anybody, right? So just trying to get to a place like Disneyland. So in 1959, I was listening to a podcast a few weeks ago, and I like history, and so I listen to these history podcasts sometimes. And in this history podcast, it was talking about Stalin, Joseph Stalin, who he was, and not a good guy, okay? So, and then at the end of the Joseph Stalin podcast, it talked about the transition between him and the person who came behind him was Nikita Khrushchev. Anybody remember Nikita Khrushchev, right? You're good friends with him, right? Yeah. So, and so in 1959, Nikita Khrushchev, there's a meeting between him and then Vice President Richard Nixon. Yeah, some of you guys didn't know that Richard Nixon had been vice president. He was vice president in the Eisenhower administration in 1959. And so he takes a trip to Russia and the Soviet Union at the time. And so he takes a trip to the Soviet Union and trying to cool things. They were in the midst of a Cold War with the Soviet Union. He's trying to foster a better relationship. And so there's this exhibit that he goes to in Moscow. It is a replication of an American kitchen. And so he gets there to this replica of an American kitchen, supposedly. And him and Nikita Khrushchev, you know, they kind of have a little bit of a debate. Who's got it better, right? That the Soviet Union's got it better. No, the United States has it better. And right, they start going back and forth, and it becomes this sparring match. And it's actually, you can look it up, it's called the Kitchen Debate, right? And so it's part of history. Well, later on in the year, things were still kind of tense, and so President Eisenhower thought, you know, it would be a good thing to try to cool those tensions by inviting Khrushchev to the United States to visit. And so Khrushchev did not want a quick visit to the White House. Khrushchev wanted to visit coast to coast. He wanted to see everything from D.C. to L.A. And so that's what happened. He makes this coast to coast trip in 1959. And one thing that he specifically asked for, and he brought his wife and his kids with him, he wanted to go to Disneyland. Yep, no kidding. This was the highlight of his trip, that Nikita Khrushchev specifically wanted to go to Los Angeles. He wanted to go to Disneyland. And so he's in Los Angeles. He is visiting Los Angeles. He is meeting with the head of 20th Century Fox before he goes. He takes this trip to Disneyland. And during this meeting with the head of 20th Century Fox, they get into another kind of sparring match of who's the best, right? Who's America's great? You know, the Soviet Union is great. And to the point that Nikita Khrushchev is a very confrontational person. And so basically just says, listen, if you want it to be this way, we've got nuclear arms that are on the assembly line now, and we'll just, you know, we'll just bury you guys. And so the rhetoric gets ratcheted up, right? It is very tense. And this was a very tense period in American history, a very tense period in the relationship between the Soviet Union and Americans. So we see this kind of playing out, and this sparring match between the head of 20th Century Fox and the premier of the Soviet Union kind of devolves. And I don't know who it was, and it's not really known who it was, but they changed the plans and said, because of security concerns, we cannot allow you to go to Disneyland, Mr. Khrushchev. And so he was barred from going to Disneyland. He was enraged that they would not let him go to Disneyland. They said, what is this? Is it run by a bunch of thugs? Am I going to be accosted there? Is there a cholera outbreak there? These were his words. You can go look these up. And he's just very upset that he is not being allowed to go to Disneyland. He cuts his trip short, goes back to the Soviet Union, and for the next 30 years, we have a cold, cold, cold war. Okay? And that's some of you guys remember that from history. Some of you guys have lived that. You remember that Cuban Missile Crisis, right? That was before my time, but some of you guys might remember that, right? And so that's the growing up. That's kind of what we saw. That's what we saw this up until about 1991. Nikita Khrushchev was responsible for the Berlin Wall. So these were things that kind of this fallout of a conflict, this fallout of a conversation, this fallout of people that can't get along. Have you ever had somebody you can't get along with? Did it result in a Cold War, right? Have you had your own Cold War, and is it still going on? This morning, I want us to take a look at a story that we're going to look at in Genesis. But before we get there, we talked about last week that Jesus, as he comes on the scene, and he is introduced as the man who is full of grace and truth. Right, so it's almost like his business card, his calling card is this, that John, and in the Gospel of John, he said, hey, this is who he is the man full, he is the embodiment of grace and truth. And you say, well, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of grace in the Old Testament, but this is what we fail to understand is that God the Father had his own calling card, he had his own chance to really introduce himself and reveal himself, really, because that's what he's been doing all throughout history is revealing himself. Right, whether it's through nature, whether it's through specific prophets, whether it's through his word being given through the Torah, or whether it is the most specific through the person of Jesus, God has been revealing his heart and who he is. And I want us to go to Exodus chapter 34. Exodus 34 is where we kind of get this introduction of who he is. And I love this. This is where we find kind of his business card or his resume, if Yahweh had one. Exodus 34, beginning in verse 5. And it says, and the Lord descended in a cloud and stood with him there, with him is Moses, stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, and who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and the fourth generation. And you say, well, that ends kind of harsh, doesn't it? Do you see what he led with? Do you see who he says, this is who I am? I am a God who is gracious and merciful. I'm the God of grace. I am the God of mercy. I'm slow to get angry. I have steadfast love. I have a long love for you, a faithful love for you. This is who he says, this is who I am. And so is it any wonder sometimes that when people, they talk to us and say, well, that God of the Old Testament, he's kind of angry and mean. I don't know about him, right? I like Jesus, but that God of the Old Testament sometimes, but this is how he's revealing himself. He says, this is who I am. I am the merciful God. I am the God who is gracious. And so how do we see this play out? We see this play out in a lot of different ways and a lot of different stories. And I think there's a story that we overlook the grace in a specific story. And I mentioned it very briefly last week, the story of Jacob and Esau, or Esau and Jacob, because that's how the birth order goes. It was Esau and Jacob that are born, they're brothers, right? Esau is the older one just by a little bit, right? But he's still the older one. And technically, the birthright and the blessing of the family is supposed to go to him. But we kind of know some of the story. And if you don't know the story, I'm going to just give you a little bit of the background. They're twins. They're born just a little bit apart. And Jacob comes out grabbing his brother's heel, right? That's always like your little brother. Anybody got a little brother that likes to trip you up? You know, they're always trying to mess with you. And so it's kind of indicative of what the story is going to look like throughout their life. And so their mom and dad, Isaac and Rachel, Rebecca. Thank you. Isaac and Rebecca. I'm getting all my R's mixed up. Isaac and Rebecca. They love these boys, but they kind of favor them, right? And so Isaac favors Esau, and Rebecca favors Jacob. And in this story, you just start to see some of this favoritism being played out. And I will say this, the first thing I want to just point out here, that when parents play favorites, everybody loses, okay? When parents play favorites, everybody loses. And so you have Isaac that loves his son. You have Rebecca who loves her son. And they kind of favor them in different ways. And Esau comes in one day, and he's like, hey, I'm hungry. I've been out in the field. And Jacob has been hanging out by the tents. He's cooking a meal, right? He's got this lentil stew that smells amazing. And he says, hey, give me some of that stew. And he says, well, I'll give it to you if you give me your birthright, right? I'll sell it to you. And Esau makes a bad deal, doesn't he, right? So you say, well, that's not really on Jacob, is it? Jacob didn't trick him out of it. It was really because Esau didn't appreciate what he had. And at that moment, so there's a lot of times when we don't appreciate what we have, right? Have you ever been there? You just don't appreciate what you have in that moment until it's gone. And then once it's gone, it's like, oh, wow, I missed that. I wish I had that back. And that's kind of how this story goes, is there are things that are happening in this story that Esau doesn't appreciate at the get-go. He doesn't appreciate the birthright, and so he sells his birthright to his brother. And then later on, Jacob does do some devious things where he gets in cahoots with his mom, and they cook up this plan to steal the blessing from Esau. And then that brings us, after all this happens, after Esau sells his birthright, after Jacob cheats him out of his blessing, and the blessing and the birthright are two different things, because the birthright really, it conveys more of a material inheritance and a family leadership. That's what the birthright conveys. But the blessing conveys a spiritual favor and a prosperity and divine guidance. And so these were two things that Jacob winds up with. He winds up with both the birthright and the blessing in a couple different ways. And so we get to Genesis chapter 27. Genesis chapter 27 is where I want us to go. And it kind of gives us a little bit of insight of how Esau is thinking at this point. After all this is done, after he has lost his birthright because he made a bad deal, and then his brother cheats him out of the blessing. Verse 41 of chapter 27. It says, now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob, right? I don't think we have to have any kind of different translation. I think it's pretty clear what it means in the English is what it meant in the Hebrew, okay? That he wanted to kill his brother. He was upset with his brother. And this, how many of you have been upset with your brother and sister before? Have you been upset with somebody? Have you been upset with them enough to want to kill them? Maybe you said that, I'm going to kill you, right? But hopefully you didn't mean that. I believe that Esau meant that. I think that after everything that they had been through, I think Esau meant that in that moment that we see here in chapter 27. He is enraged. And he says, you know, the days of mourning are coming. And so he knows his dad is getting older. And he says, listen, while dad's living, I'm not going to do anything. But just as soon as dad is dead, you're mine, buddy. You're mine. And so mom overhears this. She gets this, and she says, hey, you can't stay around here, Jacob. You got to hit the road. And so he does. So for about 20 years, these brothers, they do not see each other. And can you imagine what can happen over a 20-year span if you just if you're bitter, right? You know what bitterness does to you. If you let bitterness sit, and bitterness, we not only hate, this is what I pulled from another message. I went back and I remember this, and I love what we said at that point. It says bitterness. We not only hate what someone did to us, we begin to hate that person too. We can begin to hate ourselves for ever allowing it to happen in the first place. And bitterness makes you hate every side of everything and everyone. That's what bitterness does, right? We not only hate what happened, we begin to hate that the person that it happened with. And then we begin to hate ourselves for allowing it to happen. And there's just all these areas of hate that bitterness creates in us. And we carry that. And you can imagine in the story what that would look like, that he's carrying this hate. There's this confrontation. There's this conflict between these brothers. And we see conflict day in and day out. We are people that we see a lot of division in our world. We can see division in the church. We can see division on social media. Everybody is divided about something. Everybody's upset about something. Can we just say that? Everybody is upset about something. It doesn't even have to be politics. It could be something else. Everybody's upset about, you know what, if it rains, if it doesn't rain, right? If we get a roundabout, if we don't have enough roundabouts, right? If just whatever side that you're on, there's going to be division, there's going to be conflict, and there's going to be confrontation. And how do we deal with that confrontation? I think that's where our world lacks this quality of grace. We need more grace. What the world needs now is grace, right? What the world needs now is love, sweet love, right? Isn't that how the song goes? But what the world needs now is grace. What we do need right now in our life, in our families, in our homes, in our church, in our relationships, as an employer or an employee, we need grace in these relationships. I believe that grace is one of the most powerful tools that God uses to change situations and change the world. Because that's what we see. When Jesus came, Jesus was the embodiment of grace and truth. And we even see the calling card in Exodus 34 where God the Father says, listen, this is who I am. So the Trinity is representing this picture, this reflection. Who are they? We're graceful. We're merciful. We're compassionate. And that's what we want for our creation. That's what we want for you. But sometimes we don't always get that because we choose a different way. We choose a different path. We choose to get angry. We choose to keep bitterness on the inside, and it begins to destroy us. And this bitterness, as it begins to destroy us, it becomes the cancer that just begins to eat away at us. So what happens? What happens if you choose to forgive, though? What happens if you choose to go a different direction? If you don't choose the way of bitterness, what happens if you choose forgiveness? See, when grace meets humility, reconciliation is possible. When grace meets humility, reconciliation is possible. You're able to come together. You're able to work through things. You're able to find healing in your heart. You're able to find some peace. You're able to find that place that's just like, you know what, I can let this thing go. So what does that look like? Let's fast forward in the story just a couple chapters. If we go to chapter 33, and we see in this chapter 33, I'm still in Exodus. There we go. Genesis 33. There we go. We come to chapter 33 of Genesis, and this is what it says. And it says, Jacob lifted up his eyes. He's already had this encounter with God. He's already wrestling with God, right? And that's really what God changes his name to when he changes his name from Jacob to Israel. You've struggled and striven with men. Now you're striving with God. You're struggling with God. So this is that name change right after that name change has happened. And Jacob lifts up his eyes. He's been away from his brother for 20 years. He is married. He has children. He's actually increased that God has blessed him, right? God has absolutely blessed him. He has all the stuff. He has material wealth. He has a loving family. He has he has received that blessing, really, from God. And so he knows he's getting ready to meet Esau. And he hears, hey, Esau is coming to you, and he's coming with 400 men. Now, I don't know about you, but if the last conversation you had with your brother, he said, I'm going to cut your head off, right? You can kind of think that when he's coming at you with 400 men, what do you think he's about to do? What do you think that he wants to do to you? You can just kind of imagine in your brain, I think he's ready to take me out here. And so Jacob, in verse 33, in chapter 33, verse 1, and Jacob lifts up his eyes and looked and beheld, and Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. And so he divided the children among Leah and Rachel. Rachel is Jacob's wife. and the two servants. And he put the servants with their children in front. And then he put Leah with her children. And then Rachel and Joseph last of all. And he himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. What's he doing? He's trying to communicate, hey, man, he's throwing out the white flag of surrender. Woo-hoo, hey, I'm not here to fight. I'm bowing down. He's trying to show respect in this moment where early on in life, he disrespected his brother. Or early on in the relationship, he took advantage of his brother. At this point, he's saying, man, I have great respect for you. And I will bow down, and he bows down 7 times. It is a number of completion. It's like, listen, however much that I hurt you, I want to do that much and then that much more in saying, I'm sorry. I'm apologizing. And so he's bowing down. He's trying to communicate something to his brother, and he's fearful. This is why he has kind of staggered his family out in this line as he does. He's like, hey, if I lose some of my family and my possessions and my people, he's like, maybe the ones behind can get away, right? That's kind of his thinking. I won't lose them all. Maybe I'll only lose the first ones, and like the others will have a chance to escape because my brother's coming to kill me. And he gets to the verse 4, and the unexpected happens. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Look at that. What just happened? Dude, I thought you were coming with a sword. You did not come with a sword. You came with an embrace. You came with a hug. And he's like, I'm sure that Esau, or that Jacob's kind of like, as he's being embraced by his brother, saying, is he pulling his knife out? You know, has he got somebody with a sniper, you know, on my back? What's going on? What's happening here? Because I'm sure that he's still concerned. Because he does not expect this from his brother. But something has happened. Something has changed in Esau that Esau evolved in a way, right? He changed over time. Over 20 years span, something, he was able to choose a different path. He was able to make a different choice. And so when grace meets humility, reconciliation is possible. See, what we find here is this, is Jacob expected retribution and revenge and payback, right? We've always heard, don't get mad, get even, right? Jacob expects a fight, but Esau extended favor. Isn't that what we find? But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, who are these with you? And Jacob said, the children whom God has graciously given you. So even his language, start just noticing the language here. God has been gracious to me, right? I've received God's grace. He says, then the servants drew near, and their children, and they bowed down. And Leah likewise with her children drew near and bowed down. You think that that Jacob has already prompted his people of what to do? He's like, this is our posture. This is our response. This is what we're going to do. And last, Joseph and Rachel near, and they bowed down. And Esau said, what do you mean by all this company that I meet? And Jacob answered, to find what? Favor. To find favor in the sight of my Lord. But Esau said, I have enough. I have enough. Isn't that beautiful? Man, whatever you took from me, I've got enough. Have you ever noticed that in the story? Because this is part of the story that maybe I've missed, right? That I've always seen, you know, Esau's a bad dude. Esau's messed up. Esau wants to kill his brother. At some point, Esau had a change of heart. And Esau had a change of perspective where Esau said, man, I've been blessed myself. I have enough. I have enough. And I love this. He said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself, right? Because this birthright and this blessing that I sold to you, and then you swindled me out of my blessing, you know what? You keep it. You keep what you took. And Jacob said, no, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand, for I have seen your face. Now listen, this is crazy talk here, right? I've seen your face, and what is it like? It's like seeing the face of God, and you have accepted me. Please accept my blessing. What did he steal? What did Jacob steal from him? He stole the blessing. And now what's Jacob saying here? Please accept this blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me because I have enough. Thus, he urged him and he took it. He urged him and he took it. You see that? What an amazing story here. What an amazing story of what can happen, what can take place when we choose grace. See, this is the thing about it. Grace has to go first. Grace has to go first. It doesn't wait for an apology. It extends a hand before one is given. Grace has to go first. So when it comes to grace, when it comes to finding favor, what does that look like for you? What does that look like for your life? I'm going to ask somebody to come play. There's a story that I was reading just last night, and the story was this guy, this pastor who had written this book, and he had written this book with this professor. It's about grace. It's called Proof, and I'm blanking out on the name of this professor, or this pastor, but it's about grace, and it's called Proof, and you can go read this. But he tells this story of his family that they adopt this little 8-year-old girl. And during this adoption, before she was adopted into their family, she was actually adopted into another family. And that family had difficulty integrating this family.